All right. We're live on air, hopefully.
Okay.
And I'm here with Laura from DeFi. I don't even know if we're on air.
It says live.
We've got our first viewer. We've got three viewers, so we're up and running. Hello, everybody. This is a sort of a test hangout. And I'm with Laura from Defend Europa, and I'm going to start and do a lot more YouTube in the future. So this was a bit of it's a bit of a shambles at the minute. How are you doing, Laura?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm pretty confused and
You look
pissed off with it, how complicated it is setting up a YouTube hangout.
you'll get the
But
hang of it.
all right. So what I wanted to do, what I wanted to get into was just from this first test hangout was to have a look at an article I did last year, because I think it lends itself to YouTube quite a bit. And I could share it on the screen and we could just go through it. And I've called it the lexicon, I called the article the Lexicon of Globalism. You've had a look at it, haven't you?
Yeah, I remember this article coming out last year, and it was only December, wasn't it? And it was quite big on Twitter. I remember a lot of people sharing it.
Right. Well, I just thought because it is really just a sort of a test thing. It's the first time I've completely set up a YouTube thing on my own. So I thought, well, let's have a look at this article again because it lends itself quite well to YouTube a little bit. So how are you doing with Defend Europa just before we get in there? How's things?
Oh, so busy at the minute. We've got loads going on. We've just started the new podcast on YouTube, and we've got about 30 writers now, so lots of editing to do. But yeah, it's going well.
All right, so I'm just going to do a screen share of this article and we'll get into it. And I don't know, we'll keep it, try and keep things short and just sort of, just like I say, it's just a sort of cozy entry into what I'm going to be doing on YouTube more in the future, I think. So is that coming across okay there?
Yep, I can see it now.
Right, so the gist of it is, it's called the Lexicon of Globalism, and I came across the idea behind it. The motivation for this was quite actually, I was looking stuff up on Google, and then I discovered that they've got this strange thing with they've got like a they've logged the history of words over time, so you can look and see what words are being used now, which weren't used in the past. And I think it's fascinating to have a look at. And just, you know, for me, little test video to make it about. And I'm gonna move into it a bit, yeah. So I'll avoid all the text. I'm not gonna bore everybody to death with that. But if you look at, say, the over time, this is the example on the screen here. You saw a time for horse. So this is a word that I've used as a sort of test. And you can see you saw a time for horse. So it's from 1800 and it goes up to sort of 2010. We'll just cut that off at 2010. It may be a few years after that, but I'd say we can just cut it off at 2010. And you can see that the frequency that the word horse was used, and about this is like newspaper articles, books, speeches, just the general discourse, the general public discourse. So you can see that in 1800, the horse was the main source of transport. It was working in the fields. The horse was a much more important part of life for Europeans than it is now. And so you can see that the word horse has drifted off over time. It made a little bit of a comeback recently, more recently, but you can really see that horse has disappeared from the discourse, let's say. So that's just my sort of example word. And then we can go down and we can have a look at other words. So we can see globalism didn't exist at all throughout all of these up until 1960. And then it just skyrocketed. It just went through the roof. Diversity, again, it did exist. It was there. Because of course they've got other meanings. I mean, diversity is a word that has other meanings except for globalism. But you can see again in the 1960s and then on into the 80s, 90s, and up to the present, it just went through the roof. Genocide was in after the World War II. And you can see, I mean, what's interesting about genocide is that after it didn't actually kick in, and we'll get into that later. You'd think that people were talking about genocide more right after World War II, wouldn't you, Laura?
Yeah, it's interesting how they all kind of shoot up around 1960, 1970, don't they?
Yeah, we'll get into it. But I mean, if this was a sort of, or what the point that I'm making here is that these language and these ideas, which we have forced down our throats now, they're not organic. They're not. I mean, if we go back to the, say, horse, I would say that was, I picked that because then you can see, well, it is organic. It does fade away, because it was the horse was being replaced by the car. It was being replaced by the tractor and the mechanized plow. People just weren't even, the horse became less prominent part over time, especially after the 1950s when more and more people were buying their own cars. I would say it made a bit of a comeback. It would be interesting to look at why that was, but not that interestingly. And then, so when you go with genocide, you think, well, straight after World War II, you think that's when everybody would be talking about genocide. The word was coined by Raphael Lemkin, a Jewish man, I think, around just after, 1945. We'll get into that later. But you would expect there to be a huge spike in it around about when it was invented. And because of what supposedly happened in World War II, didn't actually happen. The word genocide, which is, we're going to get to that later, but that kind of, well, we're talking about the late 1970s, and again, it just skyrocketed up. Hate, well, that's in common use. It's starting to pick up now more, but hate is a word that's used a lot anyway, so it would take a hell of a lot of books and documents and things like that to make it pop up like that. So we can kind of leave hate to one side. Multicultural, again, it's like you said, it's the same dates. Everything is happening in the same dates, including genocide. In common use is what I mean. In the general discourse of the public. Terrorism, again, I mean, you'd expect to see terrorism maybe peak during wars. It did have a spike, what's that, in the 1960s, and then it just went through the roof in the era of multiculturalism. I mean, it goes hand in hand. You can see it right there. So before we had I mean, I'm jumping ahead of myself a little bit here. But yeah, you can see that if we didn't have multiculturalism, like multiculturalism, terrorism, and how often people are discussing it and writing about it and things like that, they're going hand in hand. They're literally, you can see it right there in the how much the frequency of use of the words. Do you see it? Laura?
Yeah, sorry. I didn't realize you was asking me. Yeah, they're exactly the same, aren't they?
And then a little bit of a different transsexual again, going right up through the roof there. Tolerance again, another. They're all buzzwords of globalism and political correctness or racism again. I mean, what you can see that, so the tolerance and racism have spiked at the same rate. I mean, transsexuals comes in a little bit differently, but I mean, again, terrorism and racism and the frequency that people are using these words in English is going hand in hand. So if there wasn't multiculturalism, I'm by this, it wouldn't be genocide, it's diversity, it all goes hand in hand. And the wider point being made here that I'm trying to make, which is why I think it's interesting to look at, is that when you get a sharp spike in the way phrases are being used, it's not organic. There's an agenda behind it. You're looking at words which have been and what's attached to those words, what those words mean and what those words represent, are coming out of think tanks and lobby groups, and then they're being dripped into the political system and then into the wider media. Do you see what I mean? So if that's the case, then it's not what the liberals are saying. It's not organic. It's a forced agenda. Otherwise, it would be like horse. It would just be going steadily down. And now the flip side of that is that if oh, I'm gonna I'm a little bit more hardcore on my blog than what I can get away with on YouTube, they are censoring YouTube. Like, I can get away with a lot more on my blog than I can on YouTube. But what interests me as well is that the words, more traditional words, which I would say represent Europeans more, words like tender, beautiful, and virtue, you can see that they decrease in how much they are being used. It's a steady decrease, and it's not forced. There's nobody banning these words. It's that they're just sort of they're just drifting away. They're not in, and then if they're not being used and not being written about, spoken speeches are used in novels and whatever's on Google's banks, it means that they're not people aren't thinking in these terms either anymore. So virtue, I mean, you can see, just to take virtue as an example, in 1800, virtue was a really popular word. It was being used and written about a lot, and therefore being thought about a lot. And you can see there's this steady decline with a massive drop in the night wave, a fair drop in the 1960s, and it's just constantly on the decline. I mean, beautiful has made a little bit of a comeback there, which is nice. Degeneracy. so you can see again in the past, degeneracy was a word that people used a lot, and again, it's just kind of drifted away. Morals, again, drifted away. I mean, really, really sharply. And in the 19, say, in late 60s, 70s, dropped off. It had a steep drop. Christianity made a bit of a comeback there. I think if you scratched a little bit, it would be maybe because they're using phrases like Judeo-Christian values, Judeo-Marxist, Judeo-Christian values. So what do you have to say on that, Laura? These sort of positive words, per the more traditional European, because it's also the thinking that goes with the words. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I think it reflects the maybe the quality of the culture then compared to now, and the morals and you know what was important then. Like you mentioned, virtue and tender and beautiful, and we don't strive for those things anymore, do we? It's
No.
all kind of it, I mean, it is the words that you mentioned in the first half when you were talking about multiculturalism and diversity. Those words are just constantly forced down our throats, aren't they? It's
I mean,
it. Sorry, go on.
well, it's sort of a wider point that there wasn't, like I say, there isn't a correlation where the words of globalism, I mean, just look at the difference. The words of globalism did kind of just pop up out of nowhere in the late 50s and early 60s. That you can see the trend again and again and again, and we're going to get into some, we're going to dig into that a little bit in a minute. But whereas the decline in the more traditional, because at the end of the day, it does come down to how people perceive the world and thinking. It's the words are a manifestation of how people think. So I think tend are beautiful and virtue. If the words are disappearing, then the people's ability to think in those terms is also disappearing. But it was a gentle decline. So and it's almost as if sort of globalism stepped into that vacuum, more than stamp them out. And I know we'd be getting a little bit off track, to say that, there was a wider agenda. There has been for much longer than the 1960s, but they were on the wane, for other reasons. And into that vacuum in the 1960s came the sort of global Homo project, because that is a gentle decline, and it's sad, because it's revolution Christianity. Okay, I made a bit of a mistake there, because I've revolution 1960s, Cultural Revolution. So that's what we're talking about. In the 1960s, we had the sort of cultural Marxism was entering onto the American university campuses. The works of Marcuse and Habermas and Adorno was then complete and being pumped into the universities, and eventually it led to the hippie movement, the boomers, 60s, and it was literally called the Cultural Revolution. And you can see here, above, the effects that had. But I would say the ideology by itself isn't enough for this, because then you have to ask, well, who funded the Frankfurt School, cultural Marxists, and all of that. And I think it's part of a wider agenda. I think the project just gathered pace in the 1960s, and before that, they were fleshing out the means by which they would break down, ideas of virtue and tender, and where degeneracy would become the norm. It wouldn't be a slur word. Morals gone. Christianity, on, well, made, like I say, made a little bit of comeback. And then we come down to this. Oh, I see I can get away with more on me blog and what I can on YouTube. We can assume that this by Jewish academics would operate with a moral prism, or rather that after a founding event which would replace traditional Western European morality with something else, and that the usage of that word would spike dramatically. So let me just get back there, because. Okay, so what we're looking at here is a broad shift which is initiated in the 1960s, spearheaded by Jewish academics, which was utterly transformed the West. Words such as tender and moral have been replaced with conjured up synthetic words such as tolerance, and the spike in the first segment reveals that since the 1990s, their project has been cranked up exponentially, which it obviously has. I do not need to detail again here the nuts and bolts of the ideas and players, as I've done that before, but let us get back to the 1960s. If my theory is true, then we can expect to see a massive spike in people using the word revolution. It's not massive, but it is there. And we can also assume that this revolution, being spearheaded by Jewish academics, would operate within a prism, or rather after a founding event, which would replace traditional Western European morality with something else, and that the usage of that word would spike dramatically in the 1960s. And indeed it does. Because, which might surprise a lot of people, is that the word Holocaust was already in use before Adolf Hitler was even born. And then even in, so again, it's like the word genocide. You'd expect that in the immediate aftermath of World War II, the word genocide would have a huge spike there. I could understand it if it had a huge spike round about here, where I'm sure on the screen, but that didn't actually kick in until the 1970s. I remember David Irving, the revisionist, because he's an old man, and he said he'd never heard the term at all until the 1970s. And so it's the Holocaust forms the moral framework within which the rest of it can take place, in my opinion. That's the founding myth. And you can see that in the 1960s, there was a concerted effort, and it increased by, but it just went through the roof. It increased exponentially. And so what you've got is the sort of using these words and how often they're used over time, you can see that they're bringing in a new world. And it's not just the words, it's what the words mean. It's a new moral framework for a new man, the new world order. You got anything to say on all that? I've rambled on quite a bit here.
I'm just listening to you. Actually, I watched an interview with David Irving not too long ago, and he said that he doesn't like to use the word Holocaust because it was just kind of manufactured in the 60s and 70s, and he actually said that himself. So it's not language that they used back then during World War II, so he doesn't like to use it. That he actually said that himself.
Well, you can see it here because Google, I trust Google's because they've got this vast, gigantic collection of books and speeches and newspapers, and they've just kind of collated all of these words. And then, I mean, you're not supposed to use them for this kind of thing, I think. That's the problem there. I don't think you're supposed to misuse their stuff like this, but there it is. So David Irving was right. It's the Holocaust and white guilt. I mean, I don't know what else there is to say. It's just right there in the stats. There's no need to theorize it at all. But what you're seeing is the a push to do so, to change how people think. And all of it there in the 1960s, it increases. So when people like Tony Blair, what were in high school or whatever, and they just lapped all this shit up, and they thought they were the rebels, you see. The people in the 1960s, they didn't realize they were being drip-fed this stuff. And what they're bringing in is a world where the norm is, as we saw there above, terrorism, white guilt, mass immigration, and these ridiculous buzzwords like multiculturalism and tolerance. And that's the world which they're creating, and it's purely synthetic and top down, and words which are more organic and more rooted in the European life are just let to sort of drift away into nothingness like this. So anyway, that was me little sort of test hangout, I think. I'm hoping I'll just stop sharing that there. I'm hoping in the future to do a lot more of these things. I'm gonna maybe go back over a few articles, and I'd like to start. Well, one thing that drives me mad is just the complete bullshit that comes out of a Guardian. So I do want to like select some things from The Guardian and just pull it apart. Sometimes I'm going to rant and rave and get angry, and other times I'm just going to take the piss out of it. Are you going to come on, back on for that? Are we going to be a bit more chatty?
Yeah, you're just I'm coming now. I just like listening to you talk about it.
Well, I mean, on that one, I did rant because it was my article and I knew what I wanted to say, and just kind of had to sit there. But well, I'm gonna the problem that I've had recently is that I'm pushed for time because of the day job, and the blogging, it takes a lot of time, and to set down a blog for about 1,000 words or something like that, you've got to research it and things like that, and I'm finding a little bit a bit of a stretch because of work. So I'm probably gonna venture more into YouTube and this little hangout here, because it's easier to just kind of set up a ha well, it's supposed to be easy. Not if you're a technical retard like me. But yeah, in theory, it'll be easier to put something on and have a bit of a look at it just by speaking on a little hangout like this, I think, than all of the blog posts all of the time. So that's really all I've got to say at the minute. But yeah, I'm going to be back tomorrow with another. I'm going to be having a chat with hopefully guest worker from Majority Rights, who's a very, very intelligent fella. And in that case, I'll be in your position of just sitting back and listening. But yeah, so that's it really for now.
At least you've figured out how to set it up, so you'll be able to do it
I figured out how to do it, so
tomorrow.
I'm back on YouTube. Right, so how do I stop broadcast? So thanks everybody for listening. I did a screenshot on this one, and next time I'll be more interactive with the comments and the chat and things. Really, it's just me first sort of landing on YouTube, so there'll be more to come. Thank you very much, everybody, and I'll see you around.
Bye.